and welcome to the Human Condition Podcast on Resilience Radio. I'm Lee Hatcher, in conversation with Lynn Worsley, clinical psychologist and director of the Resilience Centre, on trauma, especially trauma suffered in childhood. It's remarkable how significant a range of trauma can be to a child into their adulthood, and when the impact sometimes strikes. So what sort of trauma are we talking about?
Okay, when we're talking about trauma, we're actually responding to a response, really. We're looking at a response that a person may have to something that is significant. So some people have experiences of trauma where they've had something done to them, such as sexual abuse, physical violence. It may be verbal and emotional abuse. That is also trauma, and sometimes that's long-term trauma. Other people are exposed to seeing a traumatic incident, like a war zone. It may be that they've been observed another's abuse, and they may have also been exposed to trauma as a result of being severely neglected. So that's also regarded as trauma. But really, when we start thinking about trauma, it's actually how we respond to things. So we all may see something that's horrible, but we may not actually be traumatized by it. But someone might see something or have been exposed to something that is significant for them, and they have a response that is a traumatic response.
Okay. Out of that range, that very wide range of possible trauma, if a child has some significant trauma in their life, how does that, or how can that affect their future development, Lynn?
Look, you know, it's one of those really, really sad things. For children, because they're going through so much development, and in their development, their body is learning to react to a number of different ways. So really, for children, what happens is that they have very raw reactions. They're really young. They haven't got the emotional maturity to manage things. So basically, you know, we can divide up a number of responses into three. One is if a child is, you know, we can fight or we can run away or we can freeze in a response. So if a child is actually responding to trauma, they might want to fight or stand up and get angry. So if that child does fight in response to the trauma, as they developed, they may actually grow up into be more angry and aggressive.
Yes.
And have sort of behavioural difficulties.
Yeah.
If they run away or hide in response to the trauma, their body will then learn, their body and brain will then learn to try and keep the peace and stay under the radar. And you might end up with a child who's very compulsively compliant, you know, does things to keep everybody happy. But if the body and the brain freeze in response to the trauma, and that's a bit like the deer in the headlights,
yes,
you know, like
yes.
you don't know what to do when you're just standing there. If the child has had a freeze response, they can develop what you call a dissociation or a cutoff from the experience, because their freezing is almost like they go into a sort of a catatonic state, like they just stop. And so that dissociation means that they can't feel or think or do anything.
Wow.
And, you know, in the freeze state, you know, with animals who are being chased in the wild, the freeze state actually looks like they're dead. So their pulse rate drops and their temperature drops, and so they no longer get chased. And that's a defense mechanism that the body does. Now, we know it now that adults and children do that in response to, or humans do that in response to trauma. So we've got those three. Mind you, there are many different responses to trauma, and
yes,
we always need to be aware of them. But I'm always keeping in my mind when I'm working with someone that they can fight, they can run away, or they can freeze. But we also might start seeing how in their future development that they start to become very fearful.
Yep.
Of others.
Yes.
And not trusting, and have a quick reaction to something, you know. So somebody touches them and they quickly ready to go and punch them or hide. You might also have untrusting relationships in adulthood. This is your hot and cold person who one minute they're really your best friend and the next minute they don't like you.
Okay.
And,
yeah,
you know, it's that sort of hot and cold difficulties that they have.
Yes.
The other adult response that sort of indicates a little bit of maybe some trauma as a child? Is it someone who's sort of going for sensation seeking and that they're trying to do something exciting to always keep covering up how they're feeling underneath? Or they could do the opposite. They could stay under the radar and not want to do anything because they don't want to cause any havoc at all. You can also have someone who is unpredictable, they're hard to reach, and they're very difficult to sort of get on with. Again, I've said, you know, someone who has difficulties within their relationships. And the last one, which I think is a very big topic on its own, Lee, is a dissociative identity or a multiple personality. And this is an amazing response to trauma, absolutely amazing response to trauma. We used to think of it as being crippling. When you actually look at how the brain and the body works with it, it's very empowering and it's a very strong thing and a very intelligent thing for a child to be able to do in response to trauma. However, it comes up oftentimes in midlife. Perhaps we can talk about that in another podcast.
Yes,
if that's
indeed
possible.
Well worth exploring. I'm amazed at the range of consequences from trauma that you've just gone through. Is it common, though, not to address it in a kid's life?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And there's a myth around that children won't remember. There's a myth around that little kids, you know, they just forget about it and they just move on because they actually do look like they're doing that.
Okay.
And a child will play, go from one way of playing to another. You know, when you watch a child play, quite often you see them going into character and they play in a character and they get involved in that character and then they have a call to dinner and they go and do something else and then they come back the next day and they can go back into that character. Now, that's very much how children manage to make sense of the world. They play it out. When a child has been exposed to trauma, quite often they may cut off, they may have a reaction to it, but they don't play it out.
Okay.
And so it's common not to address it because it looks like they're not thinking about it anymore. It looks like they've moved on.
They're kind of over it.
But they actually haven't.
No. How critical is timing, Lynn, after the trauma to address it? Do you have a window of opportunity where you can be of maximum help?
I think yes, absolutely. There is a window of opportunity for maximum help. But any opportunity is going to help.
Yes.
So if you haven't hit, you know, come in and help the child in that particular time, you know, it's worthwhile coming back later on as well. But can I just say, it's not helpful to go through the trauma step by step with a child. It's not helpful to re-traumatise them by talking about it too quickly. But what is helpful is to actually create an environment where a child feels comfortable to address it or feels like they're being listened to.
Okay.
One of the main stories I hear from people is that I told my parents this happened and they didn't do anything. Or I told my teacher and she just said nothing. Or nothing was done even though I told somebody. And then when you find out what they said, quite often they said something was quite innocuous. The teacher didn't know what to do with it or the parents sort of went, that was a funny thing to say. And they thought it was part of a game. So it was easy to dismiss.
But still big.
Very big.
Yes.
Yeah.
So from your wealth of experience, when do people come for help with their trauma from early childhood, Lynn?
There's a lot happening in early childhood and there's a lot of changes and the environment is very structured. And so that means that time just keeps going on because there's events after events after events. And that also means for children, it's easy for them to put it to one side and not actually think about it too often.
Yeah.
But what happens is that as an adult develops, they then start having it revisit them. And quite often we see people having to, I guess, have flashbacks.
Yeah.
or experiences when they've been faced with children of the similar age as when they were abused. And also maybe they've got their own children and they're wanting to be protective of those children and it's coming up very clearly for them. We also see people who've blocked out their trauma for most of their sort of early adult life. They tend to, it comes back as a flood later on. So quite often we see people going through this in their mid-30s to 40s.
So this is decades later sometimes.
Yes. Yeah. And that is very, very crippling.
Yeah.
Because the flashbacks are literally almost like a video playing. And it's that reaction is very, very strong. And it feels very unsafe. And we had a situation where people were starting to talk about it in my area of work, and they called it retrieved memory syndrome. And they were saying, you know, are these retrieved memories real or not? I guess the question shouldn't be about whether they're real or not. The question should be is that how do we help these people having this retrieved memory? Whatever's happening, it's traumatic for them, and something has happened in their past which brings back these incredible flashbacks.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily need to say the exact memory is the truth. What we need to do is help people move to a place of safety and let them be listened to and believed and understood that the trauma that they experienced was pretty horrible.
And sometimes, and often, this can have crippling impacts on people's lives, how they're operating day to day.
Yes, you could have someone who's been, you know, in a workplace doing really well with their career, maybe studying, maybe doing a whole lot of stuff, and they've done extremely well, and then all of a sudden, this is, you know, reduces them back to a child again.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have times where people have had blocks of time that they can't remember. And they'll go, look, I've gone for a whole week and I can't remember what happened in the last week.
This is not just remembering the childhood trauma. This is remembering stuff in day-to-day living.
Yes, yes, yes. So they've had blanks. And that blanks or blocks really are a situation where they've perhaps dissociated into another part of them, their own personality, or they've dissociated into a sort of a blank freeze state, a bit like they had in their first state when they were experiencing the trauma.
You're listening to the Human Condition Podcast. I'm in conversation with Lynn Worsley, Director of the Resilience Centre. So what sort of therapy is helpful for the person dealing with long-term trauma?
First of all, it's important that a person feels safe and secure, and their things that they say are without judgment, and they're given a lot of care. They also need to feel believed and protected in the sessions. And so going to see a counsellor is actually quite traumatic as well, because you think you have to tell the whole story again. People maybe want to talk about their incidents, but it's not always helpful to re-traumatise yourself by talking about it.
Okay.
Some people find it helpful. So it's really important that the therapist is able to work with that. Good therapists will make sure that a person's requests are respected. So if they're saying, I don't want to talk about it, and that's just it, I'm not going to talk about it, that's okay. Whereas if they've got going to someone who says, you've got to talk about it, it'll come out and it'll be much better for you, that's sort of like not listening to them. So it's really important that if someone feels respected, then the therapist is able to work with them that way.
Now, if I've been exposed to trauma as a child, how am I going to know that that's affecting me as an adult, Lynn?
If you're finding yourself getting affected by things without any real explanation, you might sort of notice that you've blanked out, emotional, you might tear up over something, you might feel like that there is something that's innocuous and you've just been touched in some way and you can't understand why you had such a reaction to it. That's one step. You might also be told by other people that you're a little bit prickly and reactive and you're hard to connect with. It's worthwhile exploring. Why am I like that? You know, remember too, as a child we embed ideas around down in our brains about what we think other people think of us, and so we become we build on those thoughts about what has happened to us.
Yeah.
And so if you've built on a relationship that's been abusive, you don't trust other people. And
no.
So other people might be saying, you know, why are you so prickly? It's very hard to hear, but it's very good information to hear.
Yeah.
And if you are hearing that from others, you go, okay, well, what happened to me as a child? What was I traumatized? Well, how did I react to it? Did I run away? Did I fight? Or did I freeze in response to all of this? And how am I reacting to things now?
Are there things that I can do if I don't want to see a counsellor about this?
There is a lot of helpful books that you can read, particularly autobiographies where people have had situations where they've talked about their trauma and how they've come out of that. They don't appeal to everybody. Sometimes they're re-traumatising as well. But it is useful to see how others might have negotiated their own recovery. Quite often people have read quite a number of books and then they've thought, okay, I've got to go and talk to someone about what I've been through. There are mindful techniques that are used. We talk a lot about mindfulness at the moment as being present, being in the moment. But can I just put a word of warning out? Mindfulness can also trigger off somebody who has had a dissociation. So that's the freeze response. Yeah. When you do mindfulness, it can actually push you into a dissociative state and can be a bit scary.
Okay.
So it's not always helpful for people under extreme trauma, but sometimes it's brilliant. So again, you know, we've got to work with every single person is different. There is no one size fits all.
And likely see a counsellor eventually. What sort of counsellor would be most helpful in this circumstance, Lynn?
Look, I'd always ask as to whether the counsellor has had some experience and training in trauma-informed therapy. Personally, I have worked with many people who've been through trauma, and I have found that working on a strengths perspective, you know, what it is that they got them through that helped them to cope, rather than focusing on the trauma itself. I also see that there are some coping mechanisms that people have taken from the trauma process that helps their recovery. And I don't stick to one method for everybody.
Okay.
I fit with whoever is in front of me has their different methods that work. It's really helpful to have a good counsellor who listens to you and doesn't think they know everything.
Yes.
Each person's different. And so I think the best sort of counsellor or therapist is a curious, someone who will ask what you found helpful, someone who will ask what have you thought of so far, someone who will ask what have you got in your life now that's useful that we don't want to compromise on. So that means that person joins with you in the pathway of recovery.
Yes. How will we know that recovery is possible, do you think?
In the very beginning, it's really important to work with your therapist to have a vision for your recovery before you even begin. Have a little glimpse of what it's going to look like when you don't have all the reactions.
What would you like to be like?
Yes. It's so important to think about what you will be like without the trauma in your life before you start removing it.
Okay.
And that way you're going to have an idea as you're going through therapy whether doing something in therapy is moving towards that vision or moving away from that vision. So it's very helpful for you to have that marker. It also helps the therapist have an idea of what you're like without the trauma. And as well as that, making sure that you've got a place that feels safe and secure with a therapist so you can begin your relationship with that sense of I'm going to be taking this therapist with me all the way through in my recovery.
And trust.
And trusting. So you walk together through the process of healing, and I, as a therapist myself, I think I have been so privileged with walking with many people. Every time I learn something new, it's like a new adventure, but a very sad and traumatic adventure, but at the same time, one that's filled with absolute admiration for people who've been through so much trauma and yet are brave enough to now start recovering and moving to a new place.
I continually admire your resilience, Lynn Worsley. Is there a story that you can relate to us? No names, no petrol, of course, but to illustrate what kind of thing goes on in someone's life and how they find their way through it.
Yeah, well, I'll make up a name because I won't give you the real name, but let's say her name is Joanne. So Joanne came to see me and she was in her late 30s. She'd got a 7-year-old and a 2-year-old. And she had all of a sudden realised that she didn't want to make love with her husband at all. She couldn't stand being close to him. And she was jumpy when he came nearby, and he was quite distressed by this, of course. And they'd had a loving relationship until that time, and so when the two-year-old was just on their second birthday, she was particularly nervous. And so she came to see me, and she said, "I don't know what's happening. I'm frightened. I don't want to be around him. I don't want to even sleep in the same bed. But nothing has happened to make me go like this." And so we just started exploring her feelings around what it was like to have a two-year-old. And the two-year-old was a little girl. She had a seven-year-old who was a boy, and a two-year-old was a little girl. And as we were starting to talk about it, she uncovered that she had been sexually abused as a little child. And the earliest memory she had was when she was three. That was a new thing for her. She hadn't remembered it. And she'd got to this point of her life, and she felt that it was surprising. And so that was really, really hard for her. And as we went through therapy, we wrote letters to the little two-year-old of her when she was only two. And we wrote letters back from the two-year-old to the big person. And we also uncovered some of the strengths that she had developed to keep her safe. And she had learned that she'd frozen when she was a three-year-old.
That was her response.
Her response. And when we talked about that freeze response, we worked out how clever that was. And there was a lot of strengths in how she had been able to parent her little child now. Then we brought her husband in, and he was able to start working out how to nurture her and love her and make her feel safe. And that was by pretty much taking the demands of sex off the relationship, which then meant that, you know, she felt safe to explore with him. And then they developed their relationship again and had a lovely sex life after that. But it was a case of just taking it slowly and working together and nurturing that little three-year-old that she had discovered was actually still three inside her, and needed to be nurtured and loved. The end of that is that I think she stopped seeing me after a number of years of therapy. When we caught up again, it was, she said, I'm just so grateful for having gone through the experience. And the flashbacks no longer haunted her, but the little three-year-old every now and then reared her head up, and she just smiled and had a lovely time with her, rather than feeling frightened for this strange emotions that were coming up in response to it.
What an incredible story and impact for good for that woman. And I'm sure for some listening to this podcast. Lynn Worsley, thank you so much indeed for your wisdom and time.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Human Condition Podcast. I'm Lee Hatcher. There are so many great resources on the human condition on the Resilience Centre website, www.theresiliencecentre.com.au.